Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. For BetterHomesAndGardens.com, the perfect house plant for your zodiac sign. According to an astrologer, the best house plant for you may be written in the stars by Andrea Beck. The next time you want to add a new house plant to your collection, try consulting the stars. Some believe that your zodiac sign can give you helpful insights into your personality and character, and that the position of the stars and planets at the time of your birth can even help predict your future. It's possible to apply that same analysis to other aspects of your life as well, such as decorating, choosing a cocktail, or even decluttering. Astrologer Clarice Monahan suggests the following houseplants to match up with each sign's personality traits. Number 1, Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th. And the plant of choice for this astrological sign is the ZZ plant. This plant is perfect for the innovation-loving Aquarius, Monahan says. ZZ plant is a drought-tolerant, super-easy care house plant, and its glossy leaves can brighten up any room with modern style. If you want extra drama, try looking for Raven ZZ, a newer variety with dark, almost black foliage. ZZ plants can grow up to 3 feet tall and tolerate a range of lighting conditions from low to bright light. Number 2, Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, and the plant of choice for this sign is jasmine. Pisces is the dreamer of the zodiac, and it's also perhaps the sign most sensitive, empathic, and compassionate to the needs of others. Sensitivity can be draining on the tender Piscean soul, so it needs to be something that calms, Monahan says. Keep a jasmine plant in your home, and its beautiful flowers and sweet smell will help any room in your house relaxing retreat. To grow jasmine indoors, place it in a sunny spot. A south-facing window is perfect, and keep the soil consistently moist. As a houseplant, jasmine will stay much smaller than it will in your garden, so expect it to grow up to 2 feet tall. Number 3, Aries, March 21st through April 19th. The suggestion for this sign is the zebra plant. Aries is known for its independent nature, so it needs a plant that is on the low-maintenance side, Monahan says. The zebra plant, also sometimes called zebra cactus or haworthia, is a bold succulent with white stripes on dark green foliage. It'll draw attention right away in your home, but it's also tough as nails and can tolerate some neglect. Grow zebra plant in bright light and let soil dry out a bit between waterings. It'll stay less than 1 foot tall and wide, so feel free to plop it down on a windowsill and forget about it for a while. Number 4 is Taurus, April 20th through May 20th. Heartleaf philodendron is the plant that's recommended for this sign. A perfect pairing for Venus-ruled Taurus is the romantic heartleaf philodendron, Monahan says. The planet Venus represents love and beauty, so a houseplant with heart-shaped leaves is a good match for Taurus. It's super easy to grow. Just find a spot with low to bright but indirect light and water when the soil is dry to the touch. With lots of love and care, it can eventually turn your home into a jungle with trailing vines that may reach up to 8 feet. Number 5 is Gemini, May 22nd through June 20th. The suggestion for this sign is English ivy. English ivy is such a popular houseplant, you'll have no trouble finding a twin with one just like yours. These plants look great in hanging baskets, perfect for this air sign that likes things breezy, Monahan says. Grow in a spot with medium or bright light and keep the soil evenly moist. Eventually, the vines can reach 6 feet or more. The next astrological sign and the corresponding plant recommendation is Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, and the plant is Lucky Bamboo. Water sign Cancer makes a great match with a house plant that grows in standing water, Lucky Bamboo. This is a power plant well known in feng shui to not only bring a peaceful and wise energy into your home, but also to attract luck, great health, and more love, Monahan says. Grow in bright indirect light, and if planted in water, change out the water every 2 weeks. You can also grow Lucky Bamboo in soil if you keep it consistently moist. Eventually, this houseplant can reach up to 3 feet tall. Number 7 is Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, and the corresponding plant recommendation is Amaryllis. Leo is the royal sign of the zodiac, and it needs a plant to match its regal status, Monahan says. The huge, brilliant blooms of amaryllis certainly fit the bill. You might be used to seeing these plants around the holidays, sometimes even grown as just wax-coated bulbs, but if you plant a bulb in a pot with soil, you can grow it as a houseplant year-round. One of the best varieties to match with Leo is Red Lion, which has gorgeous, deep red flowers. Amaryllis can reach up to 2 feet tall when grown in bright light. Water only when the top inch of soil is dry. Number 8 is Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, and the plant is Banana Plant. Banana plant isn't the easiest houseplant to care for, but that's what makes it a fit for Virgos. Attention to detail and care is what Virgo does best, which makes the opulent, though fussy, banana plant a good match, Monahan says. Usually grown outside for the fruit, it's possible to grow dwarf banana plants indoors to give your home a tropical touch. Just don't expect a harvest. Grow in bright, direct light and water frequently. Banana plants are especially thirsty when they're actively growing. They can grow up to 6 feet tall indoors, while some varieties stay under 4 feet. Libra, number 9, September 23rd through October 22nd, and the plant, String of Pearls. Libra, the sign of the scales, needs balance and harmony at home, Monahan says, so a hanging basket planted with a string of pearls is a match for this air sign. If you really want to mimic the symbolism of this zodiac sign, try hanging 2 strings of pearls near each other, and they'll look just like Libra's balanced scales. Hang in a spot with bright, indirect light and water when the top inch of soil is dry. Most plants will stay on the small side, but eventually this succulent can stretch up to 3 feet. Scorpio, number 10, October 23rd through November 21st. And the plant recommendation for this sign is Snake Plant. Snake plants are practically indestructible, and they have strong upright leaves that finish with a point. The look and shape will be attractive to the Scorpio, who likes things darker and with a bit of mystique, Monahan says. Snake plants can tolerate a wide range of conditions, but they don't like being overwatered. Err on the side of letting them dry out and only water when the soil is completely dry. Growing up to 4 feet tall, snake plants will be happy in anything from low to bright light. Number 11, Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st. And the plant recommendations for this sign is the baseball plant. A type of succulent, baseball plants are like large, round cacti, but without the spines. The baseball plant can tolerate being left alone for a bit, so it suits the adventurous nature of the archer who can be free to jet off to wherever they need to go at a moment's notice, Monahan says. Like all succulents, the baseball plant can handle a bit of neglect as long as it has bright, indirect light. A mature plant will reach about 8 inches tall and only needs watering once the soil is completely dry. And finally, number 12 is Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th. And the recommendation for this plant is the jade plant. Jade plant may be a slow grower, but according to Monahan, Capricorn is ruled by Saturn and excels in the values of patience. If you give a jade plant the right care and time to grow, it can stretch up to 5 feet, but it'll take years to get there, if not decades. Eventually, though, this cute succulent will look just like a tiny tree, grow in bright light, and water when the soil dries out. Gardening in the Southwest involves choosing plants that can tolerate hot, dry weather, and then caring for them with the right amount of water and soil. Plant selection. Choose plants that can survive heat and drought. Some plants that grow well in the Southwest include yucca, agave, salvia, and echinacea. Consider hardiness zones. The right plants for your area will depend on the local hardiness zones. Consider the plant's needs. Some plants, like native plants, can grow in desert soil without amendments, while others need rich soil. Soil preparation. Loose and compacted soil. After a long, hot summer, the soil can become compacted and depleted of nutrients. You can loosen the soil with a garden fork and add compost, aged manure, or mulch. Improved drainage. Many plants in the Southwest prefer well-drained soil. You can add grit to your soil to improve drainage. Watering. Water the soil, not the leaves. Use drip irrigation, soaker hoses, or a trickling hose. Collect water. Rain barrels can collect water for non-edible parts of your yard. And here are some other tips. Plant at the right time. be aware of pests, understand the local climate, and work with the existing soil. And speaking of pests, here's a column that appeared recently in the Arizona Republic. It's called The Way Insects Influence Humanity, written by Jim Higgins. If the anthropods ever decide to hire a spokesman to work with Homo sapiens, there's a pretty good chance that Barrett Klein will be on the short list. The University of Wisconsin La Crosse biology professor has made studying insects his life work. Klein brings scientifically informed enthusiasm to his new book, The Insect Epiphany, How Our Six-Legged Allies Shape Human Culture, Timber Press, where he writes about the many ways that human beings interact with, depend on, and yes, imitate insects and their anthropodic cousins, spiders. The Insect Epiphany also includes nearly 250 color illustrations. Klein is a visual artist as well as a scientist. That shows in his selection of topics and images. His sensitive antennae have picked up on many striking and provocative insect-human connections. Without insects, we would not know the taste of honey or the feel of silk, he writes in his preface. Medicine and our knowledge of genetics would look very different without lessons learned from one species of fruit fly. Insects can indicate to us how clean our rivers are, or help us solve murder mysteries. Citing the famed entomologist E.O. Wilson, Klein describes insects as the essential workers of the ecosystem. Insects are nutrients, mineral, and waste recyclers, seed dispensers, tillers of the soil, food for others, and agents of population control, preventing unsustainable explosions of plants and animals. They are also pollinators, Klein writes. Dipping my proboscis into the nectar of Klein's book, here are some facts and statements which demonstrated the insect-human connection. Insects outnumber all the rest of us put together. While no one can say definitely how many insect species there are, about 60% of identified animal species are insects, 1.1 million species out of 1.8 million. A locust swarm can contain 1 billion grasshoppers, Klein writes. A marching raid of driver ants can consist of 50 million workers, and the total number of ants on Earth may exceed 20 quadrillion. Our silk clothing comes at a cost. Four times as many caterpillars die for silk as all other animals combined that die for food in the United States, Klein writes. They contributed to the war effort. Silk from black widows and other spiders were used to create crosshairs for gun sights and range finders during World War II. Taking a transgenic approach, spider silk is stronger than steel on a per-weight basis. To work around the social and other challenges presented by spiders, researchers have created transgenic organisms by placing spiders' milk-producing genes in everything from goats and alfalfa to yeast and bacteria. Beeswax is an artist's best friend. Pigmented, melted beeswax is a traditional medium used in encaustic painting. Lost wax casting is a process that's been used to make everything from Cellini's Perseus with the head of Medusa to the tiny brass figures of the Ashanti people. Lacquered up. Shellac, the stuff of 78 RPM records and a coating for furniture, nails, shoes, and even hair, is made from the secretions of lac insects. A dye made from the lac insects equivalent to blood also is used in painting, textiles, and cosmetics. Born to the purple. Tyrian purple, the expensive dye of antiquity reserved in Rome for the highest officials, is derived from the mucus of several species of sea snail in the Muriidae family. Prized because it weathered well and didn't fade in sunlight, roughly 10,000 snails had to be killed to produce a single gram of the dye, Klein reports. They help us see red. Carmine, a natural dye derived from the cochineal insect, is the source of the stunning deep crimson color in countless artworks, including the three versions of Van Gogh's The Bedroom, often called Bedroom at Arles. Collaborators on the Magna Carta. For centuries, the Western world's go-to ink was from pulverized oak galls, plant swellings containing gall wasps. Bach's scores, Da Vinci's notebooks, and the Magna Carta are all written with it. They're space pioneers. Insects pioneered biological space travel. Fruit flies were aboard a V-2 rocket launched in 1947, proving that animals can survive a journey into space and back home again. A cockroach named Nadezhda became the first Earth animal to give birth to organisms conceived in space. She was aboard the European Space Agency's Photon M3 in 2007. They can find anything. Moths, grasshoppers, parasitic wasps, and honeybees can be trained to respond to the smell of just about anything. Ants can be trained to detect cancer. Trained honeybees cost less than sniffer dog teams and are too light to trigger landmines. Klein refers to tests of trained honeybees as explosive sniffers. The BBC has reported on recent tests that teamed bees with drones. People eating tasty insects. A recent study confirms 1,611 species of insects have traditionally been eaten by humans, but Klein believes the number of insect species humans have eaten is undoubtedly far higher. They help fight COVID-19. Novavax is a COVID-19 vaccine without polyethylene glycol, but with proteins created by cells from the fall armyworm moth. In defense of mosquitoes. Whether we can admit it or not, we benefit from the existence of mosquitoes, Klein declares. They feed the masses of fish, amphibians, birds, bats, and so many more. Ecological communities would crack and wilt and wither without mosquitoes. In addition, Seiji Ayaji and fellow researchers have created 3-part hypodermic needles that mimic the shape, mechanical action, and vibrating frequency of the mosquito's proboscis. It's part of a continuing quest to develop a pain-free needle. A mosquito bite delivers a numbing anesthetic before withdrawing blood. They know a good algorithm. After studying how honeybee colonies allocate foraging resources, Cornell's Thomas D. Seeley and 4 engineers from the Georgia Institute of Technology created an algorithm for assigning computer servers that is now used by major web hosting companies. They won a 2016 Golden Goose Award for federally funded scientific research success stories. Very early publicity. The very oldest, complete, decipherable sentence ever found in an early alphabetic script pertains to insects, Klein writes in his conclusion to the book. It's from an inscription dating back to 1700 BC on a Canaanite ivory comb found in Israeli ruins. Translated by Josef Garfinkel and other archaeologists, it reads, "May this tusk root out the lice of the hair and the beard." From Native Seed Search, tips for southwestern wildflower gardening. Choose your season. Remember, wildflower seeds can be planted at any time during the year. Some varieties actually do better if they're allowed to weather in place. Spring wildflowers typically germinate in late fall and early winter, bloom, and then set seed in April and May. The seeds lie dormant through the long hot summer, waiting for our winter rains to begin the cycle over again. Our summer wildflowers set seeds in the fall, and their seeds lie in dormant over the cool winter, waiting for the high humidity and monsoon rains of summer to germinate to begin their cycle. However, these seeds lying dormant on the ground often become a food source for birds and other wild creatures. To keep animals from gathering the majority of our seeds, most wildflower gardeners wait until the last minute to plant. For spring bloomers, this means any time from late September through December or even early January. For summer bloomers, we suggest planting as soon as the humidity begins to climb in late June. Choose and prepare your site. Wildflowers appreciate sunshine. While there are some that don't mind shade and even a few that thrive in shade, most wildflowers prefer a sunny location. If you choose to water your wildflowers, you will appreciate a location with easy access to a hose or irrigation line. Wildflowers are wild. They appreciate soils that drain well and can sprout in all but the most difficult soil conditions, so you won't need to do much in the way of soil improvements other than pulling unwanted weeds. Loosen your soil. You can use a hoe, shovel, gravel rake, or even a rototiller for large areas. You don't need to loosen it too deeply. Remember, they're wild flowers. Sow your seeds. The two easiest methods for the homeowner are the old-fashioned hand broadcast method for smaller jobs, or the use of a rotary or cyclone seeder for larger jobs. The former involves simply scattering the seed evenly over the site by hand, while the latter accomplishes the same result through the use of a hand crank spreader that can be rented or purchased relatively cheaply at a garden center. Regardless of what sowing method you choose, we recommend mixing your seed with regular sandbox sand at a ratio of about 5 parts sand to 1 part seed. This allows for a more even distribution and also provides a convenient way to mark which portions of the site have been seeded and which have not. After sowing, lightly compress your seeds into the soil, no more than a half inch, to protect them from birds, wind disbursement, etc. Remember, compress them but don't bury them. For smaller areas, you can accomplish this by simply walking over the portion that's just been seeded, or if it's a larger area, you might want to use a standard seed roller like those used when planting grass seed. That's it. You're done. Kick back and let nature take its course and enjoy, unless you choose to water your seeds. If you choose to water your wildflower garden, try to time your watering to mimic the normal seasonal weather patterns. These seeds are wild and have their own internal sense about the right conditions, so it's hard to fool them. Remember how spring-blooming seeds know to lay dormant through the summer rainy season. Until they germinate, water your seeds daily. You want to moisten the soil, but not so much that you create puddles. Once they germinate, you can give them a good soak every 7 to 10 days until they are established. After the bloom, if you want your wildflower garden to reseed, don't pull up the plants after they begin to dry out and go to seed. Leave them in place until the last of the seeds have fallen. After that, we suggest stomping the dry plants down in place to create a natural mulch. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called To Own Something Beautiful. It was written by Johnita Mullins, and there's a quote here from John Keats. A thing of beauty is a joy forever. To own something beautiful. During the days of the Depression and World War II, my mother was raised by her grandma Wilson, a widow with no pension and no social security. Their huge vegetable garden was a necessity, not a luxury, often providing them with the only food they had to eat. They survived by harvesting their own vegetables and renting out 3 rooms of their small 5-room house. One day, Grandma Wilson was out working in her yard when a neighbor walked by and stopped to admire a beautiful clump of irises growing artfully along the edge of the property. Grandma called them flags and took special pleasure in them because they bloomed faithfully year after year. She couldn't afford to buy flowers to plant, so she lovingly nurtured the few perennials that she had. The neighbor, an older woman, walked by Grandma's house each day on her way to and from work. She, too, enjoyed the bright cheerfulness of the flags at a time when the whole world seemed to be struggling. She stopped at the edge of the yard that day as if on impulse. "Would you be willing to sell me those flags?" she asked. "I surely do admire them." Grandma looked up from where she knelt in the soil, but hesitated before speaking. Sell her flowers? How could she sell them? They were one of the few patches of beauty in her hard-scrabble existence. "I'll give you a dime for them," her neighbor continued, opening her worn purse and fishing among some coins she kept tied in a handkerchief. Grandma hesitated just a moment longer as she stood and wiped her hands on the apron she always wore. She hated to part with her flowers, but a dime was a dime, and heaven knows she needed the money. She also realized that her neighbor needed that dime every bit as much as she did. She must really want those flowers. Perhaps she needed them more than Grandma did. "You can't transplant them now," Grandma explained, "not until after they quit blooming." "I know," the woman replied, and then she held out the dime. "Oh, you can pay me when you come to get them," Grandma said. She'd feel guilty taking the money now. "No," her neighbor answered with a chuckle. "I'd better pay you now while I've got the money." So Grandma took the dime and thanked her, trying to still the regret rising in her heart. A few weeks passed, and the blooms on the irises were fading. Grandma expected her neighbor to come any day and claim her purchase. With guilt, a tiny part of her hoped that the woman would forget, but Grandma knew that it wasn't right. She decided that the next time the woman walked by, she would remind her to dig up the bulbs. A day or two later, Grandma spotted her neighbor coming up the street. She was walking with one of her daughters, and they were engrossed in conversation. As they approached, Grandma heard the woman tell her daughter, "See them flags? They're mine." Well, what do you mean they're yours? The daughter asked. Did you ask Miss Wilson for them? No, I bought them, the woman said. Then why are they still in her yard? The daughter asked. Oh, I couldn't take them away, her mother answered. She don't walk by our house, but I come by here every day. The daughter looked puzzled, and Grandma was too. This way, the woman explained, we both can enjoy them. I don't have the time for working in a flower bed, but Miss Wilson takes mighty good care of them. She smiled at Grandma. I just wanted to own something that beautiful. That's called To Own Something Beautiful, written by Jonita Mullins, one of the many stories that make up Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. And this book is devoted entirely to the subject of gardening. It's made up of stories submitted by authors all over the globe, including actually some New York Times best-selling authors. It's one of many in the Chicken Soup series, and I've read these stories a number of times over the years, but I hope you continue to enjoy them, and I'll continue to offer them as part of the Green Thumb Show. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy, and we'll be talking with you soon.